Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Ann Ball, Christopher Jones Cruz, Brian Lynn, Dorothy Gundy, and Katie Weaver. But first, here is Ann Ball.
Three scientists have won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for their work in developing tiny machines. The three men are Jean-Pierre Sauvage, Sir James Fraser-Stoddart, and Bernard Ferenga. They designed extremely thin molecular machines. The machines are said to be 1,000 times thinner than a single piece of hair, and have parts that move when energy is added. The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences said the scientists' work could lead to developments in new materials and energy storage systems. The science of making things unimaginably small is called nanotechnology. Nanotechnology gets its name from a measure of distance. A nanometer, or nano, is 1,000 millionths of a meter, about the size of atoms and molecules. Jean-Paul Sauvage of France is a retired professor at the University of Strasbourg. He began the work on a molecular machine in 1983, when he successfully linked together two molecules shaped like a circle or ring. It marked the first time chemists were able to make a molecule act in such a way. Fraser-Stoddart is a professor of chemistry at Northwestern University in the United States. In 1991, he built on Sauvage's work. He found a way to move the molecular ring onto a molecular axle and was able to move the ring along the axle. Bernard Ferenga is a professor of organic chemistry at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. In 1999, he developed a molecular motor. It used a molecular blade that turned continuously in the same direction. Sarah Snugarup-Lindsay explained the importance of their work to reporters in Stockholm.
Maybe this morning you ground your coffee. Maybe you used a motorized vehicle to get here. You used man-made machines operating on the centimeter to meter length scale. It's been the dream of scientists for over half a century to take this development all the way down to the molecular scale. That's nanometers. A nanometer is 1 million times smaller than a millimeter.
Snugarup-Lindsay is chair of the Nobel Chemistry Committee. Sauvage, Stoddart, and Ferenga will share a $930,000 prize for their work. They will also receive a medal and diploma at an award ceremony on December 10th. I'm Ann Ball.
Delegates from around the world met this week in Johannesburg, South Africa, to discuss how to stop the trade in endangered animals. Representatives from 183 countries attended the Convention on International Trade of Endangered Species conference, known as CITES. The delegates discussed about 500 animals. The pangolin, or scaly anteater, was among them. Pangolins are mammals found in Asia, India, and Africa. They eat insects. Hunters catch pangolins and sell them for their meat and their scales. Some cultures believe the scales can be used in medicine. They are the most illegally traded animal in the world. While CITES often deals with the protection of large animals like big cats, elephants, and rhinoceroses, it also pays attention to smaller animals. One of the first agreements to come from the convention was to reclassify all 8 species of pangolins. They are now in the most protected group of animals. This means the CITES considers them in danger of extinction. John Scanlon is the CITES Secretary General. He said they used to call the pangolin little known. But in recent years, Prince William spoke out against the pangolin trade. Scanlon said he is pleased a famous person brought attention to the pangolin. But he noted that there are still hundreds of small, unknown animals that need help.
But we've got the snakes here, we've got the lizards here, we've got the frogs here, and some really interesting ones. The earless monitor, the Titicaca frog, the psychedelic rock gecko. There's some really interesting animals there that nobody's paid much attention to.
Dan Ash is the director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He said it is hard to make people aware of strange animals.
You're dealing with things like the Delhi Sands flower-loving fly or the Houston toad. These are things which often the public questions. Why is this important? Why should we save this?
Jen Creamer is president of Animal Defenders International. She said even a cockroach has a strange sort of beauty. Events like CITES provide the chance for discussion of all sorts of animals.
So certain species, it takes time to realize that they're in trouble.
One of the species Ash is happy to see thriving is a small fish called the Oregon chub. It took nearly 20 years to bring the fish's population back to strong levels. The Titicaca water frog is another endangered animal that could use the support of a prince or even a movie star. The Peruvian animal faces the threat of fungal infection and predatory fish. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Men seeking to become vice president of the United States were in Virginia Tuesday night for their only planned debate. The two, Indiana Governor Mike Pence and Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, spent most of the debate talking about the two main candidates for president. They also attacked the policy proposals of the other's campaign. Pence is the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party. The Republicans chose businessman Donald Trump as their presidential candidate. Kane is the Democratic Party's choice for vice president. The Democrats nominated former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton as their presidential candidate. The rules of the debate permitted Pence and Kane to talk to one another during the 90-minute-long event. But they often talked at the same time or spoke up while the other was speaking. Pence blamed Clinton's policies during her time as Secretary of State for current unrest in the Middle East. He said her policies enabled the Islamic State group to grow in strength and numbers. Pence also blamed her for what he called a newly emboldened Russia. Kane said Trump cares about himself before anyone else. And he claimed Trump had business connections with Russia that he refuses to disclose. Both vice presidential candidates said action should be taken to protect civilians in northern Syria. Pence suggested creation of a no-fly zone there. He added that if Russia is involved in more attacks on the Syrian city of Aleppo, U.S. forces should attack Syrian military targets. The two men also agreed on the need for criminal justice reforms. Kane repeatedly demanded that Trump release his tax records. Many Democrats believe they will show he has not paid federal taxes for years. Pence said Trump has operated many successful businesses and created thousands of jobs. Kane said Trump's plan to cut taxes would mostly help rich people and might lead to a recession. Pence said Clinton's economic plan would sharply increase taxes and government spending. Kane criticized Trump for his statement that more countries should have nuclear weapons. Pence said more nuclear weapons would make us safer. After the debate, political observers said they were pleased that the two men spoke mostly about policies instead of personalities. John Hudak is with the Brookings Institution, a research group based in Washington, D.C. He said, "It stands in contrast to the first presidential debate, which was very personally oriented, very focused on scandals, very focused on guttural politics, and not so much about what the future of America is going to look like." Lisa Spies worked for Pence when he served in the U.S. Congress. "We got details, we got facts, we got numbers," she told VOA. "During the presidential debate, we had adjectives and adverbs, and we had insults thrown at each other and name-calling at each other. Tonight, even though there were interruptions, they were both stating what their policies would be." On Tuesday night, supporters of the two nominees accused the other side of running a dirty campaign. The vice presidential debate took place 5 days before the next debate between Clinton and Trump. They will meet in St. Louis on Sunday.
Google has announced its first smartphone designed in-house, the Pixel. The company showed the new phone to the world during a launch event Tuesday in San Francisco, California.
So today, I'm very excited to introduce you to a new phone made by Google. We call it Pixel.
That was Rick Osterloh, head of Google's newly formed hardware group. Google's Android operating system already runs millions of phones worldwide. In the past, the company has sold phones and tablets under the Nexus name. But the Pixel smartphone marks a change by Google to design and build its own devices rather than just supplying software to other manufacturers. In addition to the smartphone, the company also launched several other high-tech devices designed to compete with main rivals, Apple and Amazon. One of the main features of Pixel is that it includes the company's latest artificial intelligence service called Google Assistant. Users can talk directly to Google Assistant to ask questions, get information, or even to perform tasks. Google Chief Executive Officer Sundar Pichai said the idea behind Google Assistant is to provide a useful, personal experience for device users.
Just like we built a Google for everyone, we want to build each user his or her own individual Google.
Google Assistant uses technology similar to that of Apple's Siri service and Microsoft's Cortana system. Pichai called Pixel the first phone made by Google inside and out. Taiwan-based HTC manufactures the phone, but Google says it completely designed and built Pixel. Here are some of the main features of the new Pixel smartphones. The phone comes in two sizes, 12.7 centimeters or 14 centimeters. The price of the smaller phone starts at $649. The larger one, called Pixel XL, will cost $769. Users can upgrade either phone from 32GB to 128GB for $100 more. The prices are comparable to Apple's iPhone and Samsung's Galaxy models. The phones have an aluminum body and glass case sold in three colors: quite black, very silver, and really blue. Pixel has a 12.3 megapixel camera that the company calls the best smartphone camera ever made. Google cited a review from DxOMark, which gave Pixel a rating of 89 out of 100. This is better than the 86 score given the iPhone 7 and the 88 rating for the Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge. The company said camera speed is also faster, permitting users to take photos without delay. A demonstration showed a user recording video as they walked down a street. The video suggested that the phone's new video stabilization technology records images smoothly. A Snapdragon 821 processor, run by Android's newest OS, Nougat, powers the phone. Using Google's cloud system, Pixel phones can store unlimited photos and video. Google says Pixel can get users through the day with one charge. It also says the battery can charge for 7 hours of use in just 15 minutes. Software upgrades are easier with Pixel because when a new update is available, it is automatically downloaded and installed. The next time the phone is turned on, the update is complete. Google offers a service built into the Pixel phones that lets users talk with helpers at any time to solve problems. The phones have a screen sharing option so the helper can see exactly what the user is seeing. A highlight of the launch event came when the company's Vice President of Product Management, Brian Rakowski, showed off some of the Google Assistant's human-like actions.
Show me my photos from last October.
Take a look at these pictures from your Google Photos.
With a quick voice command, my assistant found just the right pictures from my Google Photos collection. And it doesn't just work with dates, you can search for people, places, and things, too.
The Pixel phones are already being sold in the Google Store and will be distributed through mobile carriers throughout the world. I'm Brian Lynn.
This is what's trending today. It has not been a good month for the American internet company, Yahoo. In late September, Yahoo announced that everyone who uses its email service should change his or her password. The company said up to 500 million email accounts had been hacked. This week, the news agency Reuters reported that the company built an app that could scan emails. It said Yahoo gave the app to a United States intelligence agency. People are reacting to the latest news on Facebook and Twitter. One Facebook user said, "If you were using Yahoo for anything, just stop. Now." Three former Yahoo employees told Reuters that the company had obeyed a demand from the U.S. government. They said it agreed to look at messages sent to hundreds of millions of email accounts. Security experts say it is the first known time a U.S. internet company agreed to view incoming messages instead of stored messages. The sources said they do not know exactly what intelligence agents were searching for. Other internet companies, including Apple, Google, Twitter, and Facebook, said they never received a similar request. They also said they would not agree to such a demand. On Wednesday, Yahoo called the Reuters story misleading. In a statement provided to journalists, the company said, "The mail scanning described in the article does not exist on our systems, but many social media users continue
to criticize Yahoo for its reported action. That includes Edward Snowden, who wrote, "They secretly scanned everything you ever wrote, far beyond what law requires. Close your account today." And that's what's trending today. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Many films about Africa tell about violence and war. But the new movie, Queen of Katwe, tells a story about a chess expert. The heroine is a young girl from a slum in Uganda who works in a food market. Then she learns to play chess. The film is based on a true story. Robert Katende is the girl's teacher. He is played by actor David Oyelowo. Katende has seen the girl looking into the room where other children are playing chess and eating free food. Fiona Mutesi is played by actress Medina Nalwanga.
What is your name?
Fiona.
Katende talks to a young girl in the room.
Could you please show Fiona how to move the pieces?
Learning how to play chess changes Fiona's life. She learns the game at a place that helps the poor children of Kampala, Uganda. Katende tells her to have big dreams.
What is preventing you from being a grandmaster?
I do not know about being a grandmaster.
Sometimes the place you are used to is not the place you belong. You belong where you believe you belong. Where is that for you, Fiona?
The girl learns that Katende grew up in the same slums where she now lives. He studied engineering at a university. Oyelowo told VOA the film uses the story of a poor girl to tell about Africa and the African people.
Often when we see films coming out of Africa, it's child soldiers, it's dictators, it's poverty, it's disease. But we very rarely get to see these positive images. We very rarely get to see the self-possession of the people and the fact that they can take care of themselves from within. They don't need help necessarily from without.
In the film, Katende tries to convince Fiona's mother to let her and her brother travel to a private school for a chess competition. Fiona's mother, Harriet, is played by the Academy Award-winning actress, Lupita Nyong'o.
This is a chance for them to visit the finest school in the country.
Oh, well, how can I pay school fees?
Harriet's husband has died, and she must work hard to survive. Nyong'o says Harriet is very protective of her children.
She has to learn that, in order to really love her daughter, she has to learn to let her go and risk failure. And that's why how Fiona ends up being the champion that she becomes.
The real Fiona Mutesi defends her mother's choices.
I don't blame her for what she was doing because of where we're living. She had to protect me because there's a lot of raping kind of things. So she couldn't allow me to go away from her. But then after some time, she allowed me to go and start practicing. Right now, she's so happy with whatever is going on. She's so excited.
Today, Fiona Mutesi is a chess grandmaster and has taken part in 2 international chess competitions. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.